are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Mike and I have only fought once, and I was legitimately angry at him. He's, so all in with Matt Kemp. We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
He just loves Matt Kemp's eyes.
Matt Kemp is poop.
And I know you do not like Gregor Blanco, so I'm sorry I mentioned his name.
I think Chuck has turned into the conspiracy theorist on our show.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Something tells me he can't sustain that, but...
Really? That's a bold statement there, Eli.
It really is. I don't think he's going to hit 75 homers the rest of the way, but... Oh, yeah. Man, I am not buying that.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 114 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me this week are Eli and Chuck. Eli, how you doing?
Just swell, buddy. Totally swell. Trying to bring that word back.
Yeah.
Not having much success.
I haven't talked to you. I wasn't on the Wednesday this week because I was on Dear Mr. Fantasy. And they recorded pretty much the exact same times. So I haven't had a chance to talk to you since James Shields became a White Sox. How does that feel?
Good. They're only paying him like $9 million a year, and they didn't really give up a whole lot. Eric Johnson's whatever, and Fernando Tatis Jr. is like 5 years away if he makes the majors at all. So I love it.
All right.
They're still not going to make the playoffs because that team's a mess right now. But, it's a solid move.
Well, that was not the reaction I was looking for, so I'll
move
it over to Chuck. Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, but as much as I will it, I sit in front of the television and I pray for the Brewers to lose, and they just manage to keep winning games. And that's just that's no good for their future at all when they're, a distant fourth in their own division. It doesn't make any sense for them to win right now, but they keep winning.
Yeah, the Brewers frustrated the hell out of me. Actually, just Chris Carter, because... I took him out of my lineup the other day, or on Tuesday, because he was just been so ice cold, and just going through those streaks that he goes through. It'll be hot for a while, and then cold for a while, and then hot for a while, and whatever. And then he hits two home runs. I was like, God damn it. So I put him back in my lineup now, and I'm sure he'll continue to be cold and hit 190.
Yeah, he could strike out 9 of his next 10 at bats real easy.
Yeah. All right. Well, we want to remind everybody that we are... brought to you by officialfantasyrings.com. Go and get a ring from officialfantasyrings.com and use our promo code FWFB for 10% off at checkout. Their rings there are totally customizable, and we're actually giving one away to one of our listener league winners. I know I'm still in the running. I've fallen a little bit off in our listener league, but I expect to win a few official fantasy rings this year because... they're the end prize for two of the industry leagues I'm in, and then also our listener league. So I hope to have a lot of bling this year that I can make people from our listener leagues, make people from the industry kiss my ring all year long as I enjoy being the champion of multiple leagues. And then, as always, our intro music is brought to you by Lore Michaels and his band, The Bile Tones. You can check out... their music on Amazon.com. It's for sale there, and there will be a link inside of the show episode kind of notes on iTunes right there. So definitely check them out. We appreciate them allowing us to use their music as our intro music.
I feel like I should talk to my family about doing official fantasy rings for our Bachelorette Fantasy League instead of trophies this year.
I'll tell you, don't get me wrong, trophies are cool. I'm the champion this year of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, which is amazing, But every time I've, met someone from the league, I can't bring the trophy with me, everywhere I go. Because, it becomes really annoying to, sit down, have lunch with someone... and then just set a huge ass trophy on the on the table, So it's,
I would put that above you though. I feel like you would do that.
Oh no, I totally would, and I totally did when I met Tim Williams, who's one of our writers and in the league, and I kind of put it there. But you know, it was during the barf draft, so like it was taking up a ton of room. People made me eventually move it. Not to mention it partially broke in shipping, which doesn't happen with a ring because a ring is smaller. It doesn't break in shipping. So, you know, and part, you know, I'm sure part of the breakage was the fact that our previous champion sent it to me and literally sent it to me in pieces. So that's why I prefer a ring. So I don't know about you guys, you know, belts, trophies, they're cool for a little bit until you look at my mantle and it's covered with trophies and my wife can't fucking stand them.
Humble brag.
Yeah, you like that?
No, I don't actually.
I know. All right, let's go ahead and jump into our players that we're going to talk about. You know, a guy that we haven't really mentioned this year, but is just having an amazing year. He's in the top 20 of players on ESPN's Player Rater. 10 home runs. He's got over 35 runs in RBIs apiece, and is hitting .379 for the year. It's Daniel Murphy of the Washington Nationals. Now, he, you know, made his money last year in the playoffs for the Mets, just going crazy. And I think everybody thought that he would probably be a little bit overrated. But this is a guy that's, you know, since, you know, May 30th has hit 3 home runs, is absolutely killing the ball. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Daniel Murphy's value for the rest of the season?
Well, Daniel Murphy has kind of been my pet peeve since the beginning of the draft season, because I think everyone wanted to dismiss his power surge in the playoffs so fast that I think there was an aversion to it that actually created like a negative backlash. Like, his draft position went down because he ripped off, you know, 10 or 12 home runs in, you know, 7 or 8 games. And I never understood that. You know, there was a rumor that he worked with the exact same guy that Curtis Granderson worked with when he was in New York, and that got him 2 more pitches on the inside of the plate and brought out more power in him. I was stunned. He was the 12th second baseman off the board in NFBC ADP. He was behind guys like Colton Wong and DJ LeMahieu. I took him in my December draft at pick 127, and people were literally laughing at me like it was complete foolishness. And now he's got a .416 OBP, and he's literally doing everything but stealing bases. You know, his batting average has gone down the last 2 weeks. He's only hitting .340 in the last 2 weeks, and that's his worst stretch of the season so far. So, you know, I think people vastly underrated Daniel Murphy going into the season.
Eli, what's your kind of value for Murphy rest of the season? I mean, obviously, you know, as great of a season he's having, he can't keep this up. You know, he's not going to hit, I mean, even .340 the rest of the way. But, like, where would you put him necessarily rest of the way in terms of second or third baseman?
You know, probably like a top 5 second baseman. Like, he's still going to score a ton of runs in that offense. I feel like he's going to drive in Bryce Harper a bunch. Obviously, got some elite power for a second baseman. And like you said, the average is going to drop. This is just so weird to me because, like, everything Chuck said is completely right, but at the same time, like, what he's doing is, like, utterly insane. Like, we're looking at, this is the guy that was, like, crazy consistent his whole career. Now, all of a sudden, like, he's jumped up his OBP 100 points. Like, how is this happening? Like, and the weird thing is his walk rate's down from last year and his K rate is up. Like, I don't understand this. Obviously, a lot of this is a .392 BABIP, but I still don't understand how this is happening. He's definitely going to regress, so maybe selling high is a good idea. But at the same time, we're still looking at a guy that, even if he struggles down the stretch, he's still going to be a top 5 second baseman, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can point to the .392 BABIP, but I mean, it's not like his BABIP is that far above his average. Obviously, it's going to come down. You know, I mean, his career BABIP is in the you know .319, .320 range. So, you know, it comes down 50 points, but that still has him batting, you know, over .300 rest of the way, more than likely. You know, he's not necessarily pulling the ball or hitting the ball harder, or, you know, pulling the ball more or hitting the ball harder. You know, at some point, you know, we have to say that, yeah, of course this isn't completely legitimate, but maybe he is a little bit more of the player that we saw in the second half last year than he is, like, you know, a player from 3 or 4 years ago. I have, you know, the hard part is you can't buy him right now, like, because you'd be just spending way too much. You know, I tried to purchase him in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League from a team that is decided they're going to rebuild. And, like, you know, they wanted a top 40 player for him. And I was just, yeah, that's just not going to happen. So, like, what would, like, if, let's say you were going to sell on him right now, what would be the minimum you would have to get for Daniel Murphy, Chuck?
Well, I think people have a tendency to look within the same position, and usually trades are made outside the position. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I had, if I was trying to trade Murphy, I'd probably be looking for a pitcher. And if I was looking for a pitcher, I think you've got to get a top 25 guy, maybe even a top 25 guy with some upside. I mean, I don't think Jacob DeGrom would be completely out of hand if somebody needed help at second and third. You know, I think, you know, you're in that kind of territory. Somebody who's scuffling along a little bit but has huge upside would be the minimum that I would take for him right now. I think the Curtis Granderson career path is kind of reminiscent here, because Curtis Granderson could hit for a little average, could steal a little bases, etc., when he was in Detroit. And then all of a sudden he just completely exploded when he was in New York, and everyone just blamed it on New York's field or whatever. But I think Daniel Murphy's on that career path right now, and he's probably going to have a 2 or 3 year stretch where he's a monster right now. I wouldn't trade him. I wouldn't trade him low, I'll tell you that. I would ask for plenty.
Okay, well, you said you would take a top, you would want at least a top 25 starter. Let me throw some guys at you guys from the pitching position, and let's see if you would take them for Daniel Murphy. Would you take Danny Salazar?
Yes.
Yes.
Would you?
That's probably the lowest guy I would take.
No, Salazar's a stud, man.
All right, well, I'm guessing Chuck may not take Jose Quintana, but Eli, would you take Jose Quintana?
No.
You would take Murphy over Quintana?
I think
I'm taking Quintana.
Maybe. I do think second base has pretty good depth, mm-hmm. so you can make do. But I do think Quintana, the start that Quintana had was just completely ridiculous. Like, he's the most consistent player on the planet. Like, he's going to, you know, just have a decent ERA, decent whip, decent strikeouts, not a lot of wins. Like, he's solid, and I guess a lot of people need pitching these days, so I guess if you're desperate for pitching, absolutely. But if you're not desperate, then no.
Chuck, I'm assuming you're not taking Quintana, right?
I'm not. Right. I think these questions come down to, you know, Murphy's got 10 home runs right now. You know, if he finishes with, say, 22 home runs, then maybe you should take some of these offers. If he's going to finish with, you know, 28-plus, 30-plus home runs, then I think Quintana's way too low.
Well, for what it's worth, I mean, if you look at Zips and Steamer's rest of season projection, Zip has him hitting, they both have him hitting over 300 rest of the way, but Zips has him hitting 10 more home runs, Steamer has him hitting 8 more home runs. So, I mean, if you buy into the projection systems, you know, he's pretty much, you know, going to double his output rest of the way, at least in the power department. The runs and RBIs are both higher than, you know, 35 apiece rest of the way. I would say that I would buy into 12 to 14 more home runs. So he finishes with 22 or 24. So, I mean, I think I would take Quintana. What about Steven Matz? Who I think everybody was a little bit down on considering his draft price, but he's just been electric.
I think it would have to be a keeper league for me to take Matz over Murphy.
I think I would take Matz.
Yeah, I'd take Matz too. I'm obsessed with National League pitchers. Give me the National League pitcher every time.
Okay, then why don't I throw out an American League one, and I'll throw out, let's see, oh, well, American League pitching sucks. Jordan Zimmermann.
Whoa. No.
Who is a top 25 pitcher so far this season.
Yeah, he looked terrible today, by the way.
Yeah, I know. that's why I didn't want to throw him out there.
He is from Wisconsin, though. You know, I got to know my Wisconsin athletes. There aren't too many of them.
All right, what about Corey Kluber?
I would take
Kluber. I think you got to take Kluber. It's too much upside there.
He's got a Cy Young already.
Yeah,
you can make shift second base.
Last one, Tanaka.
If there's a hint of an injury, conceivable injury issue, then I'm going to stick with Murphy. And that's, you know, that's what it was with Mats for me, and that's what it is with Tanaka. I would think I would rather have Murphy. Murphy's been very, very durable.
I think in a quality start league, I would take Tanaka. In a wins league, I might lean Murphy right there.
And he's only got 59 strikeouts in 78 innings.
Yeah, so I know, but he's just been he has looked so good.
I know, the whip's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and he's got an under 3 ERA. So, I think the tiebreaker for me, if it's a wins or quality start league. Let's go ahead and move on. Did you have one more thing, Chuck?
No, I just think one thing that's been undersold in this depiction is, I mean, obviously it's not going to be that way next year, but I think there's increased value in a lot of leagues because he's second base and third base eligible. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to play some first base this year, and he might still if Zimmerman gets hurt again, but I think there's some extra value there because
when he gets hurt again.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to John Gray, Colorado Rockies pitcher. We've talked about him once or twice on, I believe, the Wednesday show. But he has just kind of, you know, been exceeding expectations, especially in the last month. Eli, what are your thoughts on John Gray rest of the year?
Yeah, I know he's been better lately, but this is still a guy I'm sitting at home and also probably sitting on the road against elite teams. I mean, see the 6.65 home ERA. See the 9 runs he had just allowed a few starts ago at St. Louis. Like, I know there's plenty to be excited about. His ground ball rate's really improved, which is exactly what you need to succeed at Coors Field. And the velocity's up, throwing the changeup less, which is good because it was not an effective pitch last year. But he's a guy that I'm going to continue to monitor, but I'm still going to be cautious of when I'm starting him or not.
What about you, Chuck?
I have him in deeper leagues, and I'm starting him every time out now. You know, he's got over 25% of a whiff rate on his slider, and he's, you know, people are swinging at it over 60% of the time. He's got, and there's a 180 batting average against that slider in the last 2 months. He's got 3 10-plus K games in his last 9 starts. You know, 23 strikeouts in his last 13 innings pitched versus San Diego, which I know kind of maybe skews the whole situation. He's got 6 quality starts in his last 7 games started, you know, and 2 of those starts were at home. He's got 4 pitches with 4 distinct velocity ranges. I guess I'm all in on John Gray, more so than other people, despite the fact that every time I see him, I think he kind of looks like Andrew Cashner, which isn't a good thing.
He kind of does, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, you know, outside of, you know, a really bad start against St. Louis, I mean, he's pretty much thrown a quality start in every start since May began. You know, including 2 games with double-digit strikeout performances, both of them at home, and another, like, an 8 strikeout performance on the road. And that includes a start versus Boston, who's got the best offense in baseball. So I think, you know, he's a must-start on the road for me, but you just have to kind of pick and choose his starts at home. You know, if he's going up against decent competition, then maybe you sit him. If he's going up against, San Diego or, you know, some of the crappier offenses in the National League, then I think he's okay to start at home. You know, there may be some blowups here and there, but for the most part, I think he's a pretty trustable guy. He's learned how to pitch in Colorado at this point.
You know, you guys are younger than me. I remember for years, everyone said no one could pitch in Texas. Before Kenny Rogers finally broke through and pitched a little bit in Texas, Texas's pitching was terrible every year, and it was the storyline that no one could pitch in Texas, period, end of discussion. And that's completely gone by the wayside, like in the last 15 years. And I think eventually there's going to be a breakthrough in Colorado, and I'm not convinced that John Gray isn't the start of that breakthrough.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that there's ever going... I think, you know what the breakthrough in Colorado is going to be? Is when they get a new stadium and it's a dome. Like, they've got to figure out a way to temper the conditions in Colorado. That's the only way. Because, I mean, you know, go back... If you don't listen to the Prospect Podcast, with Mike and Matt. They have a discussion about Colorado and pitching in terms of kind of their minor league system coming up. And they said something that I didn't know about Colorado is not only is Colorado a bad pitching park, every single one of their minor league stops along the way is a bad pitching park. So, like, they have no spot to, like, really develop pitching along the way. And, you know, maybe that helps try to prepare them for what it's going to be like in Colorado. But until they get a new stadium and they figure out a way to, you know, better kind of deal with the you know, geographic conditions of the area, I think they're going to be in trouble personally.
Well, they've taken a couple of steps this year. Did you hear about how they're flying their pitchers back to do bullpen sessions? You know, if they're out on the road and you're going to make your next start in Colorado, they're flying the pitchers back to do their bullpen sessions in Colorado because they think it was messing with their heads that they were pitching, you know, their bullpen session at regular altitude and then going back.
Oh, man, I am not buying that as a factor whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a factor or not, but I knew that's one thing that they're doing. And their pitching has been a tick better this year, despite the fact that they don't have elite quality on that staff to begin with. You know, I asked this question, and I'm not saying you guys, obviously, I don't think Colorado can come back to being the same pitching level that Texas is versus the rest of the league. But I would say this, if you had elite pitching, if you took Clayton Kershaw and you gave him the next 2 years in Colorado, is he still a top 20 pitcher? I think he probably is.
Sure. Okay, but John Gray is nothing similar. Sorry. Like, I know John, if there is going to be a Rockies guy to succeed, John Gray's got about as much talent as anyone they've had in quite some time, but like, what, in the last 15 years, we've seen, like, what, 1 year from Ubaldo? That's, like, the only year that's been relevant. Like, someone needs to be so goddamn good to make it work in Colorado, and I'm sorry, I'm just not buying it from John Gray.
And, like, and I think the problem, too, is you can't go out and get those guys. Like, you have to develop them. And they have not shown the ability in their minor league system, whether it's because of the ballparks, whether it's because of the coaching staffs they have, whatever it is, whatever it's the draft evaluation that they're using, they haven't, you know, John Gray is the first pitcher since Ubaldo to come up through that system to be good, like, you know, or even be halfway decent. I mean, they've had nobody. They've been absolutely fucking dreadful.
Is that management and development? Because we have seen very quick turnarounds in that. And I'm not saying, you know, next year or something like that. I'm saying, like, 3 years from now, 2-3 years from now, they could have a really strong, they could really have a strong minor league system. Think about how fast the Brewer system changed around. Think about how fast the Padres system went from bad to good to bad again. I mean, there is relatively quick turnarounds in those things. Like I said, I'm not claiming that all of a sudden Colorado is going to turn into a pitcher's haven, but it wouldn't shock me if there is a day and an age soon, like in the next 10 years, where we're drafting 3 or 4 Colorado pitchers in the first 5 or 6 rounds of a draft.
I don't think that'll ever happen because you can't get free agents to sign there. They're pitching free agents. You just can't. I mean, like, you know, look what, you know, and Zach Greinke has been a hell of a lot better as of late and really rebounded Arizona. But look at what the adjustment factor was for him in Arizona. And you're going to multiply it, you know, at least a few times by going to Colorado. Colorado can't afford the major free agents that, you know, some of these other places can. And they're definitely never going to be able to get anybody who thinks they've got another contract left on the pitching side to go there. And, like, that's what you would need. You would need a, you know, Scherzer, a Greinke, you know, type guy, you know. Like, what is the ballpark chance that Steven Strasburg, you know, or one of the young pitchers, you know, coming to free agency here in the next few years would sign there? I just don't think they would have to pay so far over market, and a team that brings in the kind of revenue that they do can't afford to do that in order to land a guy like that.
See, I think the adjustment is mental more than it is physical.
No, there's definitely a physical adjustment.
There is a physical adjustment, but the mental adjustment is that you don't have to pitch like your Clayton Kershaw to be a really good pitcher in Colorado, because you get a lot more run support. You just need to pitch a lot better than the people you're pitching against. So in all honesty, like, I think that's one thing that's going to change over time, is that, yes, you're right, your numbers are not going to look like Clayton Kershaw's numbers if you pitch in Colorado. But guess what? If you pitch to a 3.05 ERA and a 1.2 whip in Colorado, you're going to win a boatload of games, okay? And the rest of humanity should realize that you are a significantly better pitcher than all the people that you're pitching against. And I think that's the mentality. You can't compare yourself to the rest of the league if you're pitching there. You have to compare yourself to the people you're pitching against and other people pitching in that ballpark.
When was the last time a top 60 pitcher signed in Colorado and did decently well? Mike Hampton?
I don't think he didn't do
really bad.
Well. I mean, he did decently well for Coors.
I don't know about that.
I gotta look up.
I think that was one of the worst contracts of all time.
But I mean, let's see. I'm pulling up his numbers as I kind of stall.
I just think this could change over time, and I guess I'm.
That's like the definition.
You're right. Mike Hampton was a better hitter than he was a pitcher in Colorado.
Yeah, a 5.41 and a 6.15.
That's absolutely dreadful. I must have been. I was thinking probably of his Braves year after that.
You know what the funny thing is? He was an All-Star his first year in Colorado, despite a 5.41 ERA.
That's because he could hit the long ball, baby.
He's like Madison Bumgarner. He wanted to be in the home run derby.
There's only been one pitcher that's been like Madison Bumgarner, and that's Carlos Zambrano.
Yeah. If Bumgarner doesn't do the home run derby, I'm just going to shoot myself. I want to see this so badly.
He's not. The Giants are never going to let him. Come on.
I think they are. I think it's going to. I honestly think it's happening.
No, it is not happening. You know what? You know
no one ever gets hurt in the home run derby. Ever, 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 ever. It just doesn't happen.
And we've never had a pitcher for a reason. I mean, one pitcher.
Bumgarner owns the Giants. He's like, I'm going to pitch like 80 straight days. They're like, okay, go ahead. Like, like, he's underpaid. He's done so much for the organization. Everyone in the world wants to see it. No one ever gets hurt in the home run derby. They probably think he's going to lose in the first round and be done with it.
There's no way the Giants let him, number one.
I think
number two, that wouldn't even be the best draw. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it would make me watch the home run derby, and I can't tell you the last time I've watched an entire home run derby live. Last year was the first time in a long time I've watched an entire home run derby, but I didn't watch it live. You know, I DVR'd it and then watched it. The key draw here is Bartolo Colon in the home run derby.
Well,
I mean, why not, right?
Well, I agree, why not? But I'd much rather see Bumgarner.
Oh, no way! I would much rather. Could you imagine what the crowd reaction would be to every single dinger that Bartolo Colon?
Oh, you mean all of what? Maybe one that he hits. Get out of here.
I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I saw something on Twitter the other day that says that Bartolo Colon has the highest average exit velocity of any pitcher.
That seems unlikely.
It probably because
the only time he swung all year was that time he hit a home run. Like, now when he goes to the plate, he tells the catcher he's not swinging. The guy's so afraid of swinging.
But to bring I'll bring the conversation back to Coors Field, and Bartolo Colon is the kind of guy that you could get to pitch in Coors Field because he's already had his career. And
this
you
is
get
insane.
But he's
insane
not even convinced.
You can get him convinced to say, look, you know, you don't need to pitch for your legacy and your numbers versus other pitchers.
Okay.
Just pitch to be better than the person you're pitching against. That's what pitching in Colorado is about.
And how many 43-year-old veterans are good? That, like, what do you get out of here with this shit?
There is. I still believe this. Remember, nobody thought all these baseball teams were going to be bad at the beginning of the season, too. And there's a bunch of them that are dreadful. So. My crazy theories sometimes come true. So
this is your craziest.
Well, let's move on. We spent way too much time on Colorado. Let's go ahead and talk about Jay Bruce, who's been pretty good as of late, and could end up being a guy that's moved by the Reds. Should be a guy that's moved by the Reds. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jay Bruce rest of the way?
Well, I have some real struggles with Jay Bruce. I mean, obviously, he's still only, you know, he's still not 30 years old. He's hitting 321 over the last 2 weeks, which is really good. But I noted right away that his recent schedule, he had 3 games at Milwaukee, 4 games at Colorado, and 4 games at home.
But Colorado's a pitcher's park, right, Chuck?
It'll never be a pitcher's park. But the point being is that if I could, I would sell high right now because he's still not walking very much. And his K rate is only slightly down. And I think when he gets traded, not if he gets traded, he almost has to get traded to a worse situation because the last thing Colorado needs is another outfielder. So I don't see good long-term potential in Jay Bruce as far as someone to buy while he's playing this well.
Eli, are you selling on Jay Bruce right now if you can?
I guess it makes some sense to sell on him, but I'm buying him a little bit more than Chuck is. The K rate's actually the lowest it's been since 2009. He's swinging outside the zone way less than he's ever has before. I think he's making good adjustments at the plate. I feel like he's a legit outfield three the rest of the way. I do think he's definitely getting traded, so where he goes will have a lot of say on how valuable he is, because obviously he's in a good park right now. But I'm optimistic that the old Jay Bruce is back here and that he's a legit outfield three.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. And a lot of the teams that have been connected to him, you know, they're maybe not as great of hitters parks in that Cincinnati has, but I mean, Toronto's been connected to him. So I mean, if he ended up in Toronto, I'd be pretty happy. And he's a guy that, you know, he's not a bad defender. He's a pretty good defender for the most part. So he could end up, you know, staying in the National League. It's not like most teams in the National League are like, yeah, I'm not interested because he doesn't play good defense. And, I mean, it's not like he's not pulling the ball more, so he's not trying to, like, sell out for power. He's got the highest hard hit percentage of his career. His BABIP isn't out of control. His BABIP's under 300. So, I mean, you know, all the signs to me, including the stuff that you said about, you know, him striking out less, kind of points to me as this is a little bit of a resurgence. And if you had asked me before that, before I put his name on this list, if he was under 30 years old, I would have said there's no way he's under 30 years old. He just seems like he's been in the league forever. But
yeah, I was going to mention that he's younger than a lot of people think, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, he just seems like he's been in the league for way longer than that, you know, and he has. I mean, he's been in the league since, you know, 2008. So, you know, a guy that's been in the league for 8 years, you wouldn't necessarily expect him to be under 30. So I think if he does get moved, as long as the situation isn't awful, it's probably, you know, maybe his power numbers come down a tad bit, but he's got 13 home runs and only 40 RBIs. The Reds are fucking awful.
I would love to see him in a White Sox uniform, big time.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they need, a left-handed power bat.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be great in Chicago in the White Sox. He'd be great in Toronto with the Blue Jays. You know, even shoot, I mean, you know, he kind of fits what they already really have, but even in Baltimore, you know.
Well, I'll give you guys another one of my theories to debunk. And this one will probably be easily debunked by you guys, but I fully believe this, that players that have been with the same organization for a long time and they've never been traded around are much more volatile when they get traded. I'll give you a good example. David Price said he had a terrible time when he first got traded because he had always been a Ray, et cetera, before he got traded the first time. And that was one of the worst stretches of his career right after he got traded. It said it really messed with him. And Jay Bruce has always been a Red. I do think he's going to be very productive while he remains a Red this year. But I'm going to be on the lookout. He's going to go to a completely different clubhouse culture. It's going to be the first time he's been in a pennant race in, well, like 5 or 6 years. There's a number of red flags that this might not end well for the team that acquires him.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to see some sort of kind of backing up of that because – I guess Daniel Murphy wasn't traded, so, but I mean, he's been pretty great his first stint with a new team. And I don't know. I think
I feel like he probably wants to be traded, right? Like, he's probably sick of this rebuild shit. Like, he probably wants to play meaningful games. I feel like that could be a jolt to him.
Yeah, I mean,
I said it was more volatile. It could be, maybe it'll turn out to be a really good thing, but it's also, like I said, it's something where, you know, you know, it's a little bit different for these guys moving around when they've been in one spot for as long as a guy like Jay Bruce has been, including all of his minor league career.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but I think Chuck has turned into the conspiracy theorist on our show.
Yes.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. Let's go ahead and move on to a new guy, and let's talk about Danny Duffy, who was a guy that a lot of people had really high hopes for in Kansas City, and never has been able to really stick in the rotation, but has been hot as of late. What have you seen from Danny Duffy, Chuck, that makes you think that he could be legit, or is this just a flash in the pan?
He's another guy that I'm all in on, and it wasn't even my idea to bring him up. He's 27 years old now, 20 strikeouts in his last 17 and two-thirds innings pitched. He's thrown his changeup 5% more of the time than he has in the past. I love this 1.07 whip, 0 walks in his last 22 innings pitched. You know, they're cautiously amping up his innings pitched, and that would be the red flag that I would look for. That I would look to right now, because I want to see if he can stay strong getting into the seventh inning more often than he has, which is not at all really. You know, there's a starting pitching vacuum in Kansas City right now. Their pitching has been pretty dreadful. And I think the run support is going to be a little shoddy, but I see a big arrow pointing up for Danny Duffy right now. If you told me two pitchers that are not on many people's radars were going to finish in the top 40 from here on out, from this point forward, I would say Danny Duffy and John Gray are the two best candidates.
I knew you were going to say John Gray.
Eli, where are you at on Danny Duffy?
I'm kind of with Chuck on this one. 2 walks and 33 strikeouts in his last 30 innings. Like, the problem with him was always control. It wasn't the stuff. So the fact that he's cut down on the walks is really encouraging. And it's not like he's been getting lucky. The BABIP is completely normal. He's actually been unlucky in homer to fly balls. The fastball velocity is up a little bit, but that's probably because he was in the bullpen for a good chunk of the year. But like Chuck said, he's throwing the changeup way more, the curveball way less. That was not an effective pitch for him last year. So that's good. Like, anytime there's like a big uptick in performance, you look to see reasons why it's happening. And like, all the reasons here seem legit, and this makes sense. I'm encouraged.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything in his numbers necessarily that points to this necessarily being a fluke. And I mean, here's one of the things you talked about, his fastball velocity being up. You know, Brooks Baseball has him around 97, 98 when he was in relief, and it's only dropped to 95, 96 miles per hour as a starter. So, I mean, and that's fantastic for a starter, you know, especially if he's
making. Especially a lefty, yeah.
Yeah, and especially if he's maintaining it left, you know, long into games. I do worry that, you know, if something Chuck said is that, you know, can he be a guy who can pitch deep into ball games and make sure he's getting you quality starts? I'm not necessarily as worried about his innings pitched, because he had 136 last year, so, you know, and 149 the year before. So he should be able to get to 170. Pretty easily, in my opinion, or, you know, at least 165, something like that. And he's only got 43 pitches or 43 innings thrown this season. I think it's kind of in between whether this is a fluke or whether this is just a hot streak. I think there are going to be some bad weeks. But right now, I think you got to ride the hot streak for as long as it goes. And hope and then maybe even hold tight when if he does have a couple bumpy roads. This is a guy that a lot of people had really high hopes for, including myself. I bought in heavily last year, and it just did not ever seem to work out. I need to watch a couple more of his starts before I can truly say whether I buy in on this or not. But this is definitely a guy that I'm going to be keeping an eye on, because he pitches in a very nice ballpark with a great defense behind him. And that is very helpful for a guy like him.
He throws so hard for a lefty. Mm-hmm. That's really hard. He's really a hard thrower for a lefty.
Yeah, and you know, and his control has been great. You know, I mean, he isn't walking. You know, the thing that killed him last year were the last, you know, couple years were walks, and he's not walking as many guys, which is if he can keep guys off the base, off the bases, then he's going to find success. Let's go ahead and move on to Eli's favorite guy, and so we'll lead off with you, Eli. Billy Hamilton has been pretty good as of late. Is it time to buy into Billy Hamilton?
Man, I don't know. I was more obsessed with Billy Hamilton than anyone. Now I hate him, but now maybe I like him again. I don't know. Like, I know that anytime someone's on pace for 40-plus steals, it's a big deal, especially because steals are, you know, way down across the board. But, like, at the same time, like, I don't care if this guy gets 60 steals. He's on pace for 6 homers and 25 RBIs. Like, I know 73 runs and a 263 average certainly doesn't kill you, but this guy never walks, and the average is probably going to drop. I mean, he hit 226 last year. And the walk rate's down from last year, and the K rate is up. Like, I don't know. The one thing that is encouraging to me is that the BABIP isn't crazy high and that he's hitting way more ground balls than he used to, and that's exactly what he needs to be doing to become a productive Major League Baseball player. Like, he's swinging at less balls. He's swinging and missing less overall. So there's reasons to be encouraged. I just, like, hate the fact that he just merges you in homers and RBIs, and, like, I just – are we buying the average sustaining at 263? If so, I think he certainly has value. If it doesn't, then that hurts him big time.
Chuck, where are you kind of at on Billy Hamilton rest of the way?
Well, I think sort of the only really noticeable difference right now, I mean, he's on pace for 34 doubles, which would be the most doubles he ever had by a lot. You know, he had 7 stolen bases now in the last 2 weeks. He's obviously been on a hot streak, and that's why we're talking about him. I mean, the Reds situation almost guarantees him playing time. They really don't have anything to lose, so the stolen bases are pretty much guaranteed. But again, once his value gets so high, if somebody wants to draft him in the first, you know, 7 or 8 rounds of a fantasy league, they can just have at it. I'm not going to give up categories just to get a category, you know, that I can try and get later and try and get during the season. So, I mean, you know, it's not that I don't like him, and I would love to see him succeed because he's fun to watch and he's kind of a game changer. But when I saw that he only has 9 RBIs so far this year, that's just like, that's like a black hole. That's like somebody who's been on the DL, but all, you know, for all but 2.5 or 3 weeks. So, I'm with Eli. He's an intriguing player, but that doesn't make him all that fantasy viable when you're trying to put together a roster.
I think if we're talking about, like, you know, pre-draft, I buy that a little bit. But considering we're talking about 2 months into the season, you know where your deficiencies are, I'm totally fine with going out and buying in on Billy Hamilton. I think that this is kind of what we expected of him when he came up, that he was never going to walk enough. But if he could keep the OBP over 300 or at 300, then he's a guy who has the potential to steal just a shit ton of bases. And, you know, he's already got 15 bases stolen. He's literally like at like a perfect spray of where he's going. He's pulling the ball 33.8% of the time. He's going center 33.8% of the time. And he's going oppo 32.3%. And he's actually hitting more grounders than he has in the past, and just kind of given up on trying to hit for power. He's got a fly ball percentage of 27.8, the lowest of his career. He's trying to find holes in the infield, trying to, you know, spray the ball in different directions, and it's working for him. I think I'm very encouraged by what I've seen. I agree with you, Chuck, that the Reds have no reason not to play him at this point and see if he can sustain it. And I think this is somewhat sustainable. His BABIP's not out of control. He's not like... like I said, he's not trying to pull the ball for power or anything. He's given up on the home run for the most part, except for in occasional situations. So I think this is really encouraging. I like what I've seen. You know, I wish he was on a better team, but I like what I'm seeing from Billy Hamilton, and I'm bought back in.
Can I just say free Peraza? I'm not saying take Billy Hamilton's job because he absolutely needs to be playing every day, but
they
free Peraza.
They have to move Phillips first. And
they don't. Peraza can play like a little bit of every position. It's like,
but who's
like,
he going to play
on,
over?
Man.
I mean, you want him to be a super utility guy? Is that
yes,
what you're saying?
I want him to be a super utility guy until this room, and there will be room at some point in the future. Just like let him play at this point. Jesus Christ, Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's coming up. I think he's coming up in the next month. Personally, I don't think this is a situation in which. I don't think this is Trey Turner's situation. He's coming up here shortly. He's already been up at least once this season.
Yeah, he was.
And, he's hitting decently well in the minor leagues right now. So, yeah, I think he comes up, and Either he becomes a super utility guy, Suarez, who's been kind of a super utility kind of guy before, can play short or third. Maybe he, takes that role. Or they figure out a way to get Phillips to agree to leave Cincinnati.
Good luck with that. That guy's a stubborn idiot.
Aren't we all? Let's go ahead and move on to a guy for my home team, Giants. That's Jarrett Parker, who is finding some playing time because of all the injuries in the outfield in San Francisco, and because Hunter Pence is going to be out for probably about 8 weeks at least. Is got a role kind of cemented there in San Francisco. He has power. He's hit two home runs, I believe, in his last four games. Is he a guy that you guys would kind of speculate on in deeper leagues, Eli?
Yeah, I guess ride it out now just to see if you can get lucky. He's 27, so I'm always a little skeptical of guys that take this long to make an impact, but he has always hit for power in the minors, and he's actually a second-round pick in 2010, so he's got some pedigree. He's got pretty good walk rate throughout his career. He's got potential to steal some bases from time to time. Like you said, Pence is out for a long time, so Parker might get a long look here. I still think the Giants are going to make a trade at some point, but for now, there's no reason not to give Parker a chance. So I'm encouraged. That home run to fly ball rate is kind of hilarious, though. Have you guys seen that? It's like 60% or something. Something tells me he can't sustain that. But
really? That's a bold statement there, Eli.
It really is. I don't think he's going to hit 75 homers the rest of the way, but pick him up now.
He's got a 42.9% homer to fly ball rate, and it's only surpassed by the fact that in his September call-up last year,
it was 67%.
Yeah, he went on that just torrid, just mashing just minor league pitching that was in the majors at the time. And yeah, he has a 66.7% one last year. So,
he's a freak.
I mean, obviously, this is the greatest player of all time that we're seeing right now, I'm sure. Chuck, what do you think about Jarrett Parker rest of the way?
I was stunned from just watching him play. I wouldn't have known that he stole 20 bases last year. Baseball Reference got me there to know that. You know, he obviously has this ginormous K rate. But he reminds me a lot, and I wonder if anyone else sees this, he reminds me a lot like of Adam Duvall, as far as, really good power in the minors. That one category, it seems, he had a 363 as his career on base percentage in the minors, which is not bad at all. He had 29 home runs last year, and he has 16 home runs in 51 pro games so far this year. This is some of these guys we're talking about. To me, where you are in your league really makes a difference. Like, if you need to shoot the moon and, see what happens, I think Jarrett Parker is the kind of guy that you can try and buy into, because I don't know. I hate to ever say anything against your beloved Giants, Justin, but it's not exactly murderer's row in that outfield.
It's not.
Gregor Blanco is still playing alongside of Jarrett Parker, and I know you do not like Gregor Blanco, so I'm sorry I mentioned his name. But I mean, I think there's playing time even if they add an outfielder. I'm Angel Pagan. I mean, these guys are ceramic, along with the fact that they're not exactly mashers. So if you need to shoot the moon for somebody who could conceivably give you 15 to 20 more home runs yet the rest of the season, I think Jarrett Parker's in a good situation to try and do that.
Yeah, I've always thought of Parker as a quad A player. Like, he just strikes out too much. He's got power and pop in his back, but that doesn't play as well in San Francisco's huge ballpark as it does for, like, Adam Duvall. And, I mean, it's the same thing as, when we talked about Duvall, a few weeks ago, I said the exact same thing. Like, I always thought he was just a quad A player, especially in the Giants ballpark. And the move to Cincinnati has, helped that quite a bit. I'm not as enthused by Jarrett Parker. I think he is, a guy to speculate on in deeper leagues if he's still around on your waiver wire and L only 15 team or larger mix. But if you think if anybody thinks he is going to be 12 team, league relevant, I just don't buy it. He's never going to hit you know, even in kind of the Giants lineup, which has been, you know, decimated by injury, I don't think he's ever going to hit above, like, the seventh spot. It's just not going to happen. So, like, the counting numbers aren't going to be great, and the park is going to sap some of that power. You know, maybe he's more of a DFS guy when they're on the road and you know he's in the lineup, because they do have Mac Williamson on the roster, too. They really like him, and they especially like his defense. So he's a guy that, will steal at bats away from Parker. So I'm not super enthused by Parker personally, and having seen him play quite a bit.
Well, can I give you guys a backdrop and throw out a question for you?
Sure.
I, in a daily transaction league that I'm in, I dropped Corey Dickerson today and picked up Jarrett Parker. I guess Corey Dickerson wasn't on our list, but he is hitting .189.
He just hit a homer, by the way.
Yeah.
That's good. He's still in my lineup today, so that's okay. I dropped him for tomorrow. But I wonder if you guys would condone or look down upon me for dropping Corey Dickerson for
Corey. Yeah, Eli is insanely just has so much hate in his heart for Corey Dickerson, in spite of the fact that these rate stats are going to turn around for Dickerson. I mean, the unbelievably low BABIP for Dickerson is just completely unsustainable. He's a much better hitter than this. And he's still showing the power that everybody said that was going to disappear in Tampa Bay. I have, Corey Dickerson for me, if you can buy low, you should buy low right now. I would never drop him right now for Jarrett Parker. I think that's insane to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't drop him for Parker either, probably just for upside purposes. But I'm with you, Chuck. Dickerson blows. Listen to the Wednesday show where I rip him to shreds.
Dickerson is never going to play against lefties this year.
It's not good.
Horrible against lefties. So, in a daily transaction league, it's hard to even tell when he's going to play. It's just a lot of work to own him.
There's no way he hits .189 rest of the way. That's insane. I mean, it's just not going to happen. This is a guy who is, has been a career like 280 something.
Coors Field. Oh, sorry. Uh-huh.
It's not just Coors Field. Come on.
His own stats were poop.
He's got a.
Now all of his stats are poop because he doesn't play 80 games a year in Colorado. Oh. He's not that good, dude. He had like a .412 slugging in his career on the road. That just shows you that when he's not at Coors, he's like a below average baseball player.
From June 8th on. I say he will hit at least .250.
I'll probably take that. I'll have to look at some stats and stuff, but like, he's just not a good overall. He's not going to steal bases. He's in a bad lineup. He's not going to score a ton of runs. He's not going to drive in a ton of runs. Is he going to be an asset in any category? No, he's not going to be. He's not going to help you in average. He's not going to help you in steals. He's not going to help you in runs or RBIs. Maybe he does a little bit of damage in homers, but I doubt it.
He's on pace for over 20 home runs.
Yeah, at the expense of every other category. Ooh, 20 homers.
But he's got. You don't buy in the. You're buying into the .207 BABIP.
Of course, the average is going to come up, but like he's still not.
If the average comes up to .250 and he's hit, he's on a 25 home run pace. I'm not as worried about him.
You have like a weird fetish for empty home run guys. I don't get it. Oh. Like, I love everything else about you, but I gotta hate you when you do this.
All right, well, let's move on because we're running too long on just weird topics.
I'm so angry.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Chris McBrien from the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast, reminding you that the voting for the Podcast Awards is open to the public from now until June the 12th. Just visit podcastawards.com and vote for your favorite podcast in 20 different categories. And when you're there, please consider voting for Dear Mr. Fantasy in the sports category. You can vote once a day, every day between now and June the 12th. That's at podcastawards.com. Thanks, and now back to the show.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about Francisco Liriano.
Can we not?
Yeah, it has not been good for Liriano this year, and this is one of those guys that while he was always kind of inconsistent, you looked at the stats at the end of the year and you went, okay, he turned in a pretty nice year. Chuck, what are you seeing from Liriano that either encourages you or scares you off completely?
Well, I think he's one of those guys now at this point in the season. If you own him, you're benching him and you're hoping he rights the ship. 13 bases on balls in his last 15 innings pitched. That's just that would be horrible for any – it doesn't matter what your role is on a major league team. That is dreadful. And he's got a 1.64 whip. I mean, that's reminiscent, yet even worse, of back in 2011 and 2012. There's something about the career path of Francisco Liriano that really scares me now. You know, he's 32 years old now. He seemed like he mentally got in his own way when he was younger, and it seems like he's mentally getting in his own way right now. I would not look to acquire Francisco Liriano right now, and I would just – I would stash him on my bench and pray he finds it because he's got huge upside when he's good. But there's I do not trust Francisco Liriano at all.
Eli, what are you seeing from Liriano?
I wouldn't even stash him. I cut him in my 14-team league where I desperately needed pitching. I'm just so out on him. He's legit been one of my favorite players in baseball for the past 5-10 years. I love the guy, but he's got a 5.25 ERA. He's been getting lucky. The K rate's down. The walk rate's up. The BABIP's not bad whatsoever. He's training a higher percentage of runners than he normally does. He's throwing fewer sliders than he has in 6 years. Nobody is swinging at the pitches outside the zone, and when they are swinging, they're not swinging and missing. He's so bad. I'm out, man. Like, even when he was good, like, he still wasn't an asset in whip. Like, the guy walks everybody, even when he's on. So, yeah, he can get you a lot of strikeouts, but he's only had more than 175 strikeouts once since 2010. Like, I know he was, like, that was last year, I know that, but, like, he's not going to help in whip. He's clearly lost. I'm out, man.
Yeah, it seems like he... what you said is people aren't swinging at the pitches outside of the zone, and when that's happening, he's just walking too many guys. And he's always been a guy who's walked too many guys, but he's also leaving the fastball up, which is leaving it more hittable. I hate to say it because Liriano's been one of those guys that I've loved for a long time. I bought in when he was a rookie in Minnesota before the Tommy John surgery. I've always bought Reback in, just kept buying at back in, and then finally was rewarded for it when he went to Pittsburgh. But I think this may be the end of Francisco Liriano. I think he is droppable in just about any format other than NL only, and even there you can't start him right now. You just have to just hold on and maybe hope that he turns it around a little bit. If you were selling, if you were trying to sell him right now, what would you sell him for? Like 50 cents on the dollar, 25 cents on the dollar?
Lower.
Yeah. I think I would take just about anything I was offered, you know? I mean,
yeah, I outright cut him in a 14-team league where my team sucks and my pitching is dreadful. I don't think he's got any chance to turn this around.
I mean, outside of, like, I'm holding on to him in our 20-team league. Just because, you know, there's no one to drop him for, and I'm holding him in NL only. But outside of that, you probably just got to cut bait at this point. You know, maybe this is an injury issue. He is a guy that has had injury issues in the past. Maybe he finds a real DL stint or even just a phantom DL stint and goes and works on his mechanics a little bit. But yeah, I'm not encouraged by anything I've seen at this point from Liriano.
Would you take Chris Carter for him, Justin?
Yes, in a heartbeat.
Okay.
And I love Chris Carter. So, let's move on over to Taijuan Walker. He started off the year just amazingly, and is been struggling as of late. Is this just a kind of a hiccup in the road, or are we buying into maybe this is who Taijuan Walker is? Kind of a version of Francisco Liriano's earlier career, Chuck?
Well, he is just 23 years old. You know, there's sort of an ongoing narrative that you have to accept a roller coaster ride for young pitching. And boy, have you been on a roller coaster ride right now if you own Taijuan Walker. I don't buy into the Mariners as a generality. And their pitching depth and their team. And, you know, he's lost six straight decisions right now. So I think he might be starting to get into his own head as well. So I Taiwan Walker needs to establish himself. He's got to prove himself established to me before I'm going to start buying in. And I'm not there yet from that small stretch earlier in the season.
Eli, are you buying in on Walker, or are you trying to buy in on Walker right now, or are you selling off shares if you got him?
I'm kind of buying in. The ground ball is a way up. Soft hit is way up. Hard hit's down. I feel like he's been getting really unlucky with the homer to fly ball. He's getting a fair amount of strikeouts. He pitches in a great park. He's still really young. He seems to be getting a little bit better here. I'm optimistic. I think I'm buying. I know it's been a bad couple starts, but you know, other than that, it's been pretty good for the whole year, honestly.
Yeah, I think this is who Walker is. I think he's got electric stuff, but he's not always going to be able to command it. And he's going to go through rough patches. And right when you're about ready to just jump off the cliff and lose your mind over him, he'll have a good run. He'll bring his numbers to a respectable level. I think, you know, I think we all got a little excited because he has the prospect name and pedigree. And we were like, oh, this is finally it. He's putting it all together. Not to say that I don't think he can't at some point. But I think we may be one of those. He may be one of those guys that kind of tricks us into buying in, and then you know he hits a rough patch and we start pulling out our hair. I think you just have to kind of set it and forget it for me, and then look at the numbers at the end of the year and go, okay, you know he gave me back some value, maybe not all the value that I thought he was going to at one point, but. You can't cut him. I don't think you want to trade him right now because his value has just dropped, unless someone, you know, again, buys into the name value. I think he's a top 50 pitcher rest of the way, so I'm fine kind of with who he is.
You're way higher on him than I am.
Okay. And you know, and but, like, if you didn't – did you buy into Walker before the start of the year?
I did not. I think right now what he's turned into is he's turned into, you know, Michael Pineda is what he's turned into. Like his stuff looks really good, but when it's off, he's just going to get hammered. And I that's the kind of people that are really hard to own if your team is doing well and crushes your spirit like a grape if your team is already struggling.
Yeah, I don't know. God, and it's hard because looking at his game log, there's no rhyme or reason to these you know last few starts. It's you know they're you know four of the five have been against pretty or well three of the five have been against pretty crappy teams, and the two good ones or two good teams were on the road. So I mean, I guess you can excuse at Baltimore, at Texas, you know, hitters parks against good teams, but. I don't know how you can excuse home versus Tampa, home versus Oakland, home versus Minnesota. I buy the skills. I really do. I buy, you know, I buy what he's throwing out. He's just got to hone in his command. And when we saw that ability early in the season. Let's go ahead and move on to Evan Longoria. Try to talk about him and Will Myers before we kind of skip out. He's kind of having a resurgence here, and there has been talk and chatter that he could get moved to a better team if the Rays fall out of it. Eli, what have you seen from Evan Longoria this year?
I feel like people kind of underrate Longoria. Like, I know, like, he started out his career and he was a complete stud, and I know he hasn't been quite the same player, but I mean, he hit 21 homers last year, 22 the year before that, 32 before that. He always gets you 75 or more RBIs, always gets you 75 or more runs, doesn't hurt you in average. Like, he's always been solid. He's definitely been a little bit better this year. And I do think, you know, some of the power regressed a little bit. But, I mean, he's still a really reliable third baseman. I think people also used to think that he was a guy that got hurt a lot, which is not true. I mean, he's played 160 or more games three straight years. So, like, he's solid, he's steady, he's reliable. He can have hot streaks. Like, I like him. I think he's a, you know, legit top 10 third baseman that you can count on.
Yeah, I was down on him at the beginning of the year. And I think you're right. I think part of the... part of the reason why people have always been kind of down on him is we've always kind of expected him to be that next level player. And he just, you know, he had flashes of it. You know, when he hit 33 home runs in 2009, 27 home runs in 2008, we thought he was turning into a 30 plus home run power guy with 100 RBI run totals, and even could steal a few bags. But I mean, it's not like he's been bad. He's always been a top 10 third baseman, except for the 1 year he got hurt. And I agree with you. I don't know where he got the injury-prone tagline. You know, he's had one season since 2009 that he's had less than 600 plate appearances. So, and he's on pace for great numbers this year, on pace for 30 home runs. You know, maybe the power numbers do regress a tad bit, but I agree. I think I'm 100% lockstep agreement with you. And if he gets traded to a better park for some reason, I'm going to take a look real quick at his contract and see what he's got left. Oh, he's still got.
He signed an extension.
Oh yeah, he's got a ton of years left. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He goes through. Yeah, he goes through.
2022, and then he's got an option year for 23. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The contract's not that unreasonable, though. He's only making 13 a year. That's actually not that bad.
Yeah, well, he makes 13. He makes 13 next year, 13 and a half, and then it goes up to the point where he's making in 2021 and 2022. He's making over 18 million each year, but a really reasonable 23 option. So, you know, if for some reason he was to be moved to a better park. I would be very happy. I think he's a guy that you could target right now that isn't going to be extremely expensive. Chuck, where are you at on Longoria?
Well, I mean, I've always liked him as a player. I think part of this portion of his career has been held down because I don't think that the Rays have had a very good offense for a long stretch of time. You know, they were a very pitching oriented team when they had, you know, David Price in the first year, Matt Moore, et cetera, and so forth. So, you know, he's got 5 home runs in his last 23 at bats. You know, I do think he's been a bit underrated, but I just think it's kind of a product of the fact that third base has just exploded. I mean, third base is a very, very deep position all of a sudden. And so, you know, I like Longoria, and I agree with you that if you got a decent buying opportunity, you know, if somebody had him as a corner infielder and they're looking to acquire some pitching or what have you, I mean, I buy into Longoria certainly enough that I think he would be a viable candidate to boost somebody's offense if you can get a hold of him the rest of the year. And I agree with all the points that you know, that Eli made. I mean, he's not going to hurt you anywhere, and he has the possibility, if he just has a couple more decent power streaks, to really, really help you in a number of areas. And he's cemented right in the middle of that lineup until he gets traded, which kind of seems unlikely to me. I do 100% think that this is a good buy medium candidate. I don't think he's reached his ultimate potential yet, but he's somebody that I would love to acquire in a trade right now. He's a fun guy to own anyway because he's a good guy overall.
All right, I'm going to throw some names at you guys rest of the way at the third base position. Who would you take, Longoria, or let's talk about Daniel Murphy.
Murphy for me.
Yeah, I think you got to go Murphy.
I think you're going Murphy too, but I think it's a lot closer than it sounds like it should be. Murphy or Longoria or Castellanos?
Oof.
I'm taking Longoria.
Man, that's close. I do believe in Castellanos's, you know, power surge this year because I think he's starting to come into his own, although he was a little older for a prospect originally. I think with the American League and the surrounding lineup and everything, I think very, very slightly I'll go with Castellanos, but I think that points to how deep third base is.
I'm a big Castellanos fan, but I'm going to lean Longoria there.
All right, Longoria or Kyle Seager?
I gotta look up Seager's numbers.
he's been crazy. He's been pretty good lately. That's for sure.
I'm gonna lean Seager.
Seager, yeah, it's Seager
because of the lineup in.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup.
That's what did it for me. Yep.
Yeah.
I'll take Seager too.
So underappreciated, Seager. Just
he
what
really,
he does.
He really is. He's just year in year out. He's a top 10 third baseman who, you know, he's not sexy, but he. He really just, at the end of the year, you look at his numbers and you're like, yeah, that was good value where I got him.
And now he gets even more overlooked because he's not even the best member of his family. So
And the consistency in Seager, I mean, as much as I like Longoria overall as a player, he certainly has not been consistent. And so I think if you're going to tell me who's got the higher floor, I believe Seager has the higher floor by quite a bit.
All right, let's wrap up with Will Myers. You know, just kind of quickly, is what we're seeing this year the kind of the realization of the prospect pedigree that we thought we would see in Kansas City and then Tampa Bay? Chuck, where are you at on Will Myers for the rest of the season?
Well, for the rest of the season, I think, you know, if you need to acquire a player with big upside, who I still think has a pretty low floor, I certainly would be interested in Will Myers. You know, if you need to make a splash with your lineup, if you need to shoot for the moon, if you will, I think Will Myers is a guy who's got significant upside. I mean, 10 home runs and 7 stolen bases, you know, hitting .396 for the last 2 weeks. You know, he's only 25 years old. I think there's plenty to buy into, but he's never done it for a full season. And so if you're in a situation where you're trying to, you know, cement a championship or something, I still think there's some significant risk here, and that lineup and that team doesn't help. So I like Will Myers. It just depends on where I was in the standings as to how, you know, interested I would be in acquiring him. Long term in a keeper league or something like that, I think, boy, if he cements himself, he could really, really, he could be a top 100 player for a long time.
Yeah, I think I'm the opposite way. I think in a keeper league, dynasty league, I'm looking to sell Will Myers. And if I'm in a redraft league, I'm kind of riding the streak. You know, the long-term health of him is something I don't necessarily buy. He's going to, after this season, like right now he still has outfield eligibility. After this season, I believe he's only going to have first base eligibility. And that really limits his upside with a guy who is not a 30-plus home run hitter. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, the stolen bases are a fantastic kind of add-on. But, I mean, do we really buy him as a guy who might steal 18 to 20 bases? I don't.
Hell no. Yeah, the last time he stole 10 bases was in 2010. Like, he never really ran that much in the minors. So I'm with you. I don't think the steals are going to continue. I don't think the averages are going to stay at 290. He's been getting fairly lucky with the BABIP, I feel like. The walk rate's dreadful. Like, one of the things we loved about Will Myers is that he had such great plate discipline and walked a great deal. Now it's... the walk rate has been slipped in half. I think I'm with you. I'm selling him in Dynasty. Like, he's just not – he's okay in a bunch of categories, but I don't think he's very good in any of them. And like you said, like, can you really buy him with the injury history? I definitely think it's time to sell.
And, I mean, even in redraft league, I might sell him now too, just because, I mean, there's only, like, kind of downside rest of the way with San Diego's offense. They're going to sell off anything they can. I did argue on the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast that I don't know if they can sell Matt Kemp. I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to, much more difficult than people.
Oh, are you saying people don't want to spend like $20 million on a guy with like a 250 OBP? Is that what you're saying?
Well, and I just don't think he's the defensive player that he used to be. So it really, I think he's best suited as a DH.
Like, I don't Kemp think is poop.
I mean, yeah, so, I mean, you can go listen to the Monday's Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast and hear me argue with Joe Pizzapia about Matt Kemp and Adam Eaton, because it definitely sparked an argument between Mike and
Mike and I. Mike and I have only fought once, and we, like, I was legitimately angry at him. Like, he's, like, so all in with Matt Kemp the rest of the way over
it's
Adam Eaton.
It's his eyes. He just loves Matt Kemp's eyes. And that is not an inside joke. That is a joke from one of the first episodes Mike was ever on. I want to say it was like an early double digit, a teen episode, you know, so probably 100 episodes ago. And Matt and me and Mike got into an argument about, I believe it was Justin Blackman and Matt Kemp. And he just kept referencing Matt Kemp's beautiful eyes.
He is a good-looking dude. There's no doubt about that. Rihanna didn't date him for nothing, all right?
Those arthritic hips, man. I know all about bad hip issues, so I don't want to trust that. But that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Eli, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and be sure to check out the Tuesday DFS show that I do with Cam, and check it out with Cam and Mike on Fridays. I feel like we're doing pretty well lately, so you know, if you want to win some money, give us a listen.
I felt like you and I did really well last week.
Yeah, I mean, I recommended that my bad shortstop recommendations lately have just been killing it. Saladino with a homer and two steals, and Eduardo Nunez with two homers yesterday. Like if you want
to
win money,
have to talk about Nunez because he's putting together an interesting season.
Well, I love him against lefties. That's really all it comes down to. Yeah.
All right, Chuck, tell us where you can reach and what you're working on.
I can always be reached at Just Chucking It. I'm trying to sort of help and chip in and some of the quirks with the site and things that are going on there, and keeping up on all my rankings and getting ready every week and trying to think of the right players for us to talk about for this podcast. So and as usual, I'm trying to bolster my own weird Oliver Stone kind of theories. So that's where I'm at.
And you can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Right now, I'm mostly, in terms of my written stuff, I'm focusing on football stuff in terms of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits site. You can always read my stuff on FanGraphs fantasy side, which is called Rotographs. I didn't put out an article this week on Rotographs because of my I had a medical procedure done yesterday and I was in a ton of pain, so I wasn't able to produce my typical Wednesday column, but that'll be back next week, where I cover trying to stream for stolen bases based on catcher. I already did it by pitcher, and so my next article will be kind of the opposite side, is looking at catchers that don't throw people out particularly well. Mike and his spouse have kind of done some cool stuff with the website, added forums where you can talk about kind of things going on with your league. We also have a Facebook group that is picking up a little bit of steam. It's a discussion group where you can talk about things going on in your league, trade question, pickup questions, stuff like that. We have a separate one for football and for baseball, so the football one hopefully will start kind of picking up here soon. We will be starting the fantasy basketball and fantasy football podcasts on new feeds coming up here in the near future. So definitely kind of check in with that. I know Eli and John are ready to go for basketball.
Yeah, baby.
So,
well, John's ready to go. He's forced me to do them. I'm like, the season's not even over yet, dude. Relax.
Yeah, so but we'll definitely be getting those going, so definitely check out all that amazing stuff. Please give us a rate and review on iTunes on our new feed. That would be much appreciated. Helps us kind of rebuild what we've put back together here at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. For Eli, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.